Ryan Gerard, a Iraqi-American political analyst and writer. Thank you very much for being with us to help sort this all out.
Well, thank you. I hope I didn't confuse you even more.
Well, I don't think so. I think we're getting a handle on it, but I think we will continue trying. So thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to KBOO Portland. It is 10 o'clock and just about time for Chris Andre hosting Air Cascadia with headlines, interviews, and commentary. Stick around, she's coming up next.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the third annual What the Festival, June 20th through 23rd in Duver, Oregon. What the Festival is an annual electronics festival which this year features the Glitch Mob, Washed Out, Nightmares on Wax, and more. There will also be a hookah lounge, relaxation huts, and the largest disco ball on the West Coast. Again, that's What the Festival, June 20th through 23rd at the Wolf Run Ranch in Duver, Oregon. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Cascadia. Today is Thursday, June 19th, 2014, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. We got a few headlines, as we always do, and whenever I say that, I always have that nagging sensation that there's a lot more out there that we are unaware of as of this point in time. Nonetheless, we do it. What we can. I'd like to add a note to the previous program. Per Fogman's guest, Ryan Gerard, was a Baghdad blogger, and he wrote a wonderful book. He blogged about the days in the run-up to the Iraq War. And the book that he published is hysterically funny. He was a Baghdad blogger for a long time. No one really knew who the Baghdad blogger was. And it's an account of him as a young man living in an apartment in Baghdad with his family and discussing what they should do. There's an enormous amount of humor in the book, and as well, of course, as a great deal of tension. And first, however, we want to just mention that on Tuesday night, numerous British Columbians, our Cascadian neighbors to the north, rallied against the federal government's approval of the Enbridge Northern Gateway Pipeline. According to Global News, where I found this, protesters gathered in downtown Vancouver to show their disapproval by carrying signs and chanting "No pipeline and defend our coast." Protesters stood across from the main Vancouver library. Two other rallies also took place in Kitimat, where the 1,200-kilometer pipeline is expected to end. First Nations are very, very active up in Canada in opposing the pipelines. And as we mentioned earlier in the week, more and more Albertans, where the tar sands fields are, in fact, are standing up on their hind legs at long last and saying no, there's very little of Alberta that's still inhabitable. And we'd like to continue to inhabit it. And the Russian environmental group EcoDefense, whose anti-nuclear campaigns derailed a building of a controversial nuclear power plant, received a so-called inspection report from Russia's Ministry of Justice declaring it a foreign agent. This is a homegrown homegrown environmental defense group. So now they're a foreign agent. The Russia's Ministry of Justice declared it the group's co-chair says that especially astonishing is that Eco-Defense also becomes the first environmental group in Russia to be named foreign agent. The group is the fifth in eight days to be designated in this way, following a new law signed by President Vladimir Putin, giving the Justice Ministry the authority to declare NGOs to be foreign agents. This puts a whole new twist on it. Much of the protests against drilling in the North Sea has come from these NGOs, and shutting them down will have a seriously deleterious effect on the activities of these protest groups. Conservation groups and salmon advocates have challenged the Obama administration's latest plan for making the Columbia Basin Dam safe for salmon. Obama's new idea is worse than the last, and in fact, identical. President Obama has shown an absolute. His entire regime has been characterized by a marked indifference and lack of understanding of this particular bioregion and the people, the animals, and the plants that all come together to create this particularly unique part of the country. So it's a little bit worrisome that this is happening in these days of a very disappointing presidency. We have, on the subject of oil, we've got someone to talk to. We've got Steve Horn, and writes for the Smog blog, is joining us again. We're very, very happy to welcome you back, Steve. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks for having me.
I see every day, I mentioned this to you in an exchange of emails, I see trains, miles of train cars every morning on train tracks along the Columbia River, along I-84. They're painted shiny black, they're tankers. And I'm wondering, I haven't seen these before, I drive the same route every day, all of a sudden, boom, there they are. It makes me wonder, has some law been passed that I am unaware of? Where do these things come from? And what about the safety issues? The Obama White House Office of Information and Regulatory Affairs has held a majority of its meetings, as you write, on the proposed federal oil by rail safety regulations. What regulations?
Well, yeah, there are no regulations right now. It's basically the wild, wild west. These trains have taken off because of the boom in the Bakken shale, which is now producing over 1 million barrels of oil a day obtained from hydraulic fracturing or fracking. And I'm not really sure. There's kind of two schools of thought here on why there's no pipelines to take this stuff to market, and why it's mostly being taken by train. Over 70% is taken by these oil by rail trains, sometimes called bomb trains, because Bakken shale oil is more explosive than other oils. It's thinner, it's lighter, and it's more like a gasoline in its chemical consistency. And so the two schools of thought are, one, building pipelines is just more expensive, so they're not going to do it. And two, it's because the Bakken shale, as the school of thought that I believe in more, is that that's true, A, but B, there's not as much Bakken shale there over the long term as has been touted. So some people think there's about 100 years of oil and gas in the United States. I would say that the Bakken shale, based on the report called Drill Baby Drill by Post Carbon Institute, there's probably more like five or 10 good years left for the Bakken shale, and it's going to start peaking soon. So then after that, it's going to be harder and harder to maintain that 1 million barrels per day. So they just don't see it is worthy of building up pipelines because
isn't it viscous too? It's kind of, isn't it different from other types of oil? It's more viscous, and they don't actually know how to build safe pipelines.
That's more like the tar sands diluted bitumen or dill bit that is in Alberta. That stuff is thick. This stuff is the opposite. It's thin. You would probably almost never see the tar sands explode in a train the way that you would see this stuff explode in trains. That's why there's been about a half a dozen, you know, upwards of half a dozen huge explosions in the past year. The biggest one last year was in Lac Mégantic in July in Quebec. So that's the issue here. And the issue is also a compounding issue that they're probably not going to build pipelines to move this stuff because they don't see, there's just no rationale in terms of spending that much money on pipelines when they can just move it by trains over this. Really shows the Bakken Shale is a short-term thing, even though a lot of people think it's this generations-long boom. It's probably a half a generation-long boom in terms of how long will it actually last, considering it's only been around for about half a decade right now, and it's grown exponentially, but it's already on its way to peaking.
You write in this piece about the June 12th and 13th Railway Age Oil by Rail conference. This is just mentioned 2 days after the rail industry representatives have met with IRA. I keep having this feeling that the fix is in and that safety regulations, the way that words are used will be distorted. So in order to characterize the safety regulations such as they are as perhaps more reliable or dependable or something that is something in any case to assuage people's general public's fears that are being stirred up by protests. People would otherwise have just said, oh, great, we'll just put oil on a train and bring it to a refinery, and that's terrific. But there's a couple of sides. There's one, steps to prevent something from happening, and secondly, what do we do once something has happened, which indeed surely will. We know that it will happen.
Well, yeah, so the debate right now is multi-part. The first part is the tank cars that carry this stuff are known as Department of Transportation 111 cars or DOT 111. Those are old, decades old, and so the rail industry's framing is those versus newer ones they put online starting in 2011 called CPC 1232 is a catastrophe prevention carrier 1232s. What happened recently, though, in late April in Lynchburg, Virginia, is a train that had those newer quote-unquote safer CPC 1232s, that one exploded, and that was a huge explosion right next to the James River in Lynchburg, right in the heart of downtown Lynchburg. Luckily, no one was hurt by it, but a lot of that oil ended up getting into the James River. And so now that debate has kind of been almost debunked, you could say, because even those exploded, and really the only difference is that the walls are a little bit thicker on the tank cars of those CPC 1232s. And so even the Secretary of Transportation, Anthony Fox, went on the Rachel Maddow show back on May 14th, just a couple weeks after that happened, and he came out and said, well, that's really a false debate because he even acknowledged the Lynchburg thing. So they're really talking about potentially other safer tank cars, you could say, but they're not really talking about replacing full out those older ones, you know, both the CPC 1232s or the DOT 111s. And that's where those meetings that I wrote about with the Office of Information Regulatory Affairs, which is a wing of the White House, those are important because it really shows that in those meetings, the rail industry and the oil industry, both of which have had significant number of meetings with the White House, are basically pushing back against doing anything about this issue, even though at the same time in public, and in particular the rail industry, has had this sort of PR image of they really care about safety and they are, you know, they go to conferences and they talk about how much they care about safety, and they really do acknowledge these safety hazards, but behind closed doors in the White House, we don't know everything that they're talking about, but we do know some things because every once in a while, the documents that they leave with the White House, they do publish online, such as the presentation slides, PowerPoint presentations, different, you know, memos, those types of things. Sometimes they just give those to the White House and the White House puts them up, so those things are up online now on the White House website for OIRA, and those do show that they're pushing really hard right now to do nothing about this issue. My analysis of it is that by the time that something even does happen, going back to the peaking production of the Bakken shale, it will be too late. Almost all of that shale oil will be gone, or, you know, will be on its way to decline. And we're still facing a huge safety hazard. You talked about the train that you saw in the Northwest. There's tons of trains, you know, there's lots of trains going to the Northwest every day into Oregon and through Washington. And those are mainly BNSF trains. They own really the western part of the northwestern part of the United States. That's a company owned by Warren Buffett, who's one of the biggest donors to President Obama, and also going to be a big donor, already endorsed potential nominee Hillary Clinton, and was a big supporter of Hillary Clinton back in 2008. So we're talking about, this is a really, I mean, these are really powerful interests that are pushing to make sure that really nothing happens in terms of regulations and safety. And I expect the fight to be just, you know, as intense as possible as they can make it until they get what they want.
Of course. And as you point out in the pieces, safety costs big bucks. Steve, thank you so much for that. You want to just briefly, before we let you go, give the website, the DeSmog blog, and where more sources that people, listeners, can go to understand
this?
I would say
read the latest piece on DeSmogBlog.com. The article is called White House Meeting Logs, Big Rail Lobbying Against Bomb Train Regulations It Publicly Touts.
I think bomb train is a good phrase. I'm going to start using that. Thank you so much, Steve. It's been a pleasure, as always. This has been Echo's KDF4, Thursday, June 19th, 2014. Rock Ridge Run engineered the show today. Thanks so much for that, Rock. Kathleen Stevenson is the KBOOAM News and Public Affairs Director. I'm Chris Andre. Get the facts. Know your rights. Take a stand. Thanks for listening and stay tuned.
Flashpoints, Middle East.